Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Gentlemen, episode number 130. We have a lot to cover tonight. We're going to have some fun. Of course, 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. 130 episodes strong. Thank you so much for your support of the past nearly 2.5 years live on the show. We have a lot to talk about and some fun times. Of course, log in live in the chat room. As always, we're going to have some fun trivia throughout the show. And without further ado, like I've been saying the past few weeks, we have former TNA superstar Jesse Neal live on the show tonight. It's a pleasure to have you tonight, sir.
Hey, man. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Awesome. All right, so growing up as a kid, were you a wrestling fan then, or is it something that you kind of start liking as a teen or a young adult?
Well, I first started loving wrestling was when, you know, I was like 6, 7, or 8 or whatever, you know, later 80s, you know, and I was like a huge Sting fan. I would sneak over to my uncle's house with my brother and a couple cousins. We'd just sit there and watch it, you know, and jump around the house and, of course, wrestle each other and do all that stuff as fans.
Absolutely. You said that you were a Sting fan. I'm a huge Sting mark myself. So Sting was definitely an inspiration to start wrestling. Do you recall your favorite Sting match of all time?
I mean, I was so young. I would love him coming out in the red, white, and blue face paint.
Oh, yeah.
Bleed on flat top, you know, and being the hero. And that originally started me, like, being, like, basically wanting to be something more. Like, he was, like, my superhero back in the day. You know, there was Captain America and stuff like that for me. And He-Man, you know. But, like, live and in my face, you know, like somebody real was Sting. And I always loved it when he came out and saved the day, you know. And that's what got me excited about, you know, wrestling and basically made, like, I could become a hero one day, you know, one of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely see that type of Sting when Sting was in the 80s. I believe we're very close in age. And so, basically, it's interesting how the people who I know or who were big Sting fans growing up kind of emulated that character, that larger-than-life, that screaming, you know, character, superhero type of deal as far as it's concerned. I could definitely see how that motivated you to want to become a wrestler yourself. So you served some time in the military before really getting to wrestling as far as television and really getting really heavy into it. First of all, I want to thank you for that. And do you have any stories you would like to share?
No, I really appreciate you thanking me. And I'll tell you that I've been out of the Navy for since 2002, and it never gets old, man. I really appreciate it. I told my wife today that a recent story, I guess you could say, I actually gave my dad dog tags. I told him to hold on to them for me because I moved around a lot after the military. Mm-hmm. And I just recently went and got them back again. And I wear them with pride, you know what I mean? Like, I don't mind, you know, wearing them and stuff. And they're like, it's a part of me, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just basically taking out the garbage in the place, the little neighborhood I live at, you know? And before, like, nobody would look twice at me. They'd look all tattoos. He looks like a weirdo, you know, that type of deal. And now, since I have dog tags on, they call me sir and morning, and, you know, I even tweeted about it. Like, it's just crazy how people stereotype. But,
yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter what you look like on the outside. You can still be, you know, basically an American hero on the inside, or in other countries, you can be somebody that, you know, something more than what people just stereotype you as. But
absolutely.
When I was a baby, man, we used to, of course, before the bombing, when I was on the coal and stuff, we would always get together at my house, a bunch of engineers and I. We'd always meet up at my house. You know, they'd bring the food. I'd pay for the pay-per-view and watch WWE all the time. I'd be running around the apartment with my Triple H jersey on, you know, and just having a good time, man. We had a blast, man. Have a couple beers, some steaks, and just having some good times with the boys from the ship.
Wow.
And those memories, they'll last a lifetime, you know, and beyond, you know, because those times you can't really of course, we can't duplicate them because I lost actually a few of those guys. And, you know, I think about it every day and I miss it. So, like, being in the business, it reminds me of that and the ones we lost, you know, that knew always, because I always talked about it, becoming a wrestler and stuff. I know they'd be proud of me, so I keep pushing.
Wow, that's incredibly inspirational, man. And, again, you know, I personally and we as the Crave Wrestling staff, and I'm sure that everyone else who are listening to the show, I just want to really, really thank you for that. And just those moments are just indelible. I mean, there's nothing that can just really can really erase those things. And there's very, very, very few things that can really top those type of indelible memories that will just last a lifetime. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, and it's so sad that you lost some of your friends, and just to really have the strength and the ability to, you know, to create some positive moments from things like that, and I'm sure it's really tough for you to endure.
Yeah, it's definitely rough to even just think about it, but I think or talk about it. And I mean, I think about it every day, you know, in my life, and instead of just thinking about it and holding it all in, I feel better if I tell my story, because who knows who I could inspire in the future. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, absolutely, fantastic. So you started wrestling, and you had some times that you wrestled before, and then you really made your break in the TNA, and you really got I guess credited or really popularized as being a graduate from the Team D Wrestling Academy from the Dudley Boys and the WWE as we know them, Bully Ray. Used to be Bubba Ray and D-Von, of course. So let us know your break into wrestling and what really motivates you to start. I know that you said that as a kid, Sting was a big motivator, and then watching WWE. But what really motivated you to say, yes, this is the time right now to start professional wrestling? And how did you get your break? And let us know some early stories.
Okay. Actually, after the military, I went through a lot of stuff in my head and stuff for what I've been through while I was in the military and stuff. I had no clue what direction, because I ended up losing everything. You know, I had a place up in Virginia. I had, you know, life, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I lost it all after the bombing. Like, I just had to find myself again, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it took a long time for me to do that. I even came home and, you know, I talk stuff with family and stuff, but, you know, they just really don't understand. They want to, but they can't. You know, they mean well, but, you know, they still don't know what you've been through. But, you know, I just kept pushing. I was going job to job, you know, and to be honest with you, I didn't even watch wrestling because I was thrown off, man. I had a weird point in my life. I think everybody has one of them, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They just don't know what they're doing. And then one day I was actually bouncing at a club, and right here in Orlando, And a friend walked in and was mentioning something about wrestling and about, you know, the 3D school in Kissimmee. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's like right down the road from my house. I'm like, this is, you know, this has got to be a sign. Because, you know, I was always complaining about, you know, me and the boys would, you know, take a break and hang out, you know, in the back or whatever. And I'm just like, man, I'm made for something else, man. I've always been thinking that. I'm made for something else, something bigger. I know it, you know. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to check this out. I don't know if it's BS or not, but I'm going to check it out. So I go down to Kissimmee, you know, at the Team 3D Academy. And I walk in, and there's Bubba Ray Dudley. And I go, okay, this is legit. Before I even shook his hand, before I did it, I didn't even see the ring yet. And I'm like, I'm signing up. This is it. Because I had to see if it was legit. You know, they just started their school. I became part of their first class. And Bubba took me under his wing from the get-go, from day one. I don't know if you could think that is a good thing. I do, but it didn't feel good because it hurt for the first year, big time. Basically, he was with me, I would say, 5 days a week for the whole first year of training. And that's why I believe that how I got signed so fast in my young career, you know, as training, I got signed literally like a year and a half after I started training. You know, I picked up very well. I did what I was told, what he taught me. I shut my mouth and I listened and soaked things in like a sponge, like you're supposed to as a new guy, you know. And, you know, I did everything he said word for word and I got signed from it.
Wow.
And, you know, I have everything to thank him for, you know, because I would be nothing in this business if it wasn't for Bubba Ray. But, and that school, Team 3D Academy, like it was a great school. And I still go there every now and then, you know what I mean, checking, because I still live in Orlando. So, and I mean, going into TNA, it was a big shock to me, like a huge shock, because obviously I'm still wet behind the ears, you know, in the business. And I'm like, okay, you know, I was on the indie scene for a year or so. And I'm like, all right, what am I doing? I'm going to tell you what, TV is a whole new world. Whole new world in the indie scene. And I was still, you know, on the indie scene when I was with TNA because I wanted to stay busy. I wanted to learn. You know, I'm a student of the game, you know, so I stayed in it, you know. And so with TNA, man, I definitely learned a lot, man. Those boys, like, they took me as one of their own. You know, they have one hell of a roster. They always have. There's a bunch of good guys there. A lot of them were, you know, a couple of them, you know, like your AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, they were coming in early, man, and rolling around in the ring with me and helping me and stuff like that. So I felt really at home to be there and very privileged to be there, you know, so soon and stuff. And like I said, man, I learned very fast. I picked up things very fast and I paid attention and I remembered, and because I wanted, you know, I wanted it better than anybody else. So, and like I said, TV's a whole new world. So but my reaction on TV is obviously completely different than now because I'm more relaxed and out there. And, you know, I'm more me, I should say, when I'm out there now. So it's a whole new world now.
Wow. So you get signed with TNA and you really get how TNA could book you. They really kind of did what you said as far as being under the wing, the wing of Team 3D, and really booking you as far as being a graduate, and of course your military background. It was a really respectable way to start your career, and really was a good way to rally the crowd behind you. The first few feuds and the first angles that you were in, what are your biggest takeaways from then?
I mean, my first fuse, what I remember, because I forget some stuff, but what I do remember the most and what I love the most is when, like you said, coming under, you know, Bubba and Devon student and Rhino came in the mix and stuff, and they started off great, and I feel like maybe I should have talked more or had a little more vignettes, because there was so much more emotion in my story, like realism, because I mean, I'm all about pro wrestling and the fight and stuff like that, but you have to have a story. You have to have something the fans can grab onto and say, that's real, or your other fans that have to go on the internet to see if it is real.
Yeah.
And my stuff, they can do that. You know what I mean? I'm justified. But and there's just so much more to me than what they saw on TNA. But my first few storylines with them was just great, man. I come in as this, you know, they're honoring me, which was a great honor anyways, you know, for all the boys to come out on stage one time, and I'm in my suit and stuff and with a flag, which is very emotional for me anyways because I haven't put on that suit in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it, just even looking at it, you know, gets to me. But, you know, I was honored to be in that spot at that moment. And then to team up with Bubba and Devon and Rhino, we had this little clique going on. We were turning heel a little bit, you know what I mean? Just, I wouldn't even say heel. We were just doing what we wanted, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, we were going on a good thing, and people were getting into it and stuff, and it was a lot of fun, man, working with my mentors and teachers. And it's just, it was an honor, you know, to be on the road with those guys and learning, you know, being on the house shows with them, you know, paying my dues, carrying the bags, you know, driving city to city for them and stuff, and just doing what you're supposed to do, old school style, but
wow.
Just somebody new.
So you step away for a little bit, and you come back, and this huge transformation comes with the new version of Jesse Neal, and you get some more ink on you, and you get this huge, very in your face hairstyle. And it was a version of Jesse Neal that it added even an extra layer on your character. So let us know what caused that, and what was that a TNA decision as far as how they wanted to rebrand you? Was it something that you decided? Because I know that you because that actually helped you develop a pretty good tag team with Shannon Moore, which was of course Inc. So let us know your transition into the new version of Jesse Neal.
Well, I'm actually glad you asked that. That's a very great question. basically, I came in like that, the hair and, you know, obviously with the tattoos and stuff like that. But what we wanted to do with the fans is to introduce them to somebody they can more relate to military-wise. You know what I mean? Like, I hid the tattoos, and of course I got my different haircut and I grew the mohawk back out or whatever. But what we wanted to do was introduce them to basically Jesse Neal when he was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dream.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And what I wanted to do was literally go step by step in my life with the fans. So that way the fans can feel what I felt. You know? And I think that's why the fans like truly love Jesse Neal that they saw on TV and that they saw getting his face beaten in that ring, because I let them into my life a little bit, you know. And then the transformation happened with the mohawk and the tattoos, and I'm coming all crazy because that's really my attitude. That's like my one of my personalities, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I have multiple personalities, I swear. But you know, that. It's just it's basically Jesse Neal times a thousand, and I wish I had a chance to evolve that even more. And then Shannon came involved, and it helped me, like when you said, to evolve or whatever. And that's what you got to do in this business.
Yeah.
Because it'll pass you up. And if you don't evolve and you don't grow with the business, you're going bye bye. You know, you might as well just leave, because people will forget about you. And it, and when I look back on those days and stuff, I truly evolved with it, like step by step by step, and you could see my transformation. I mean, obviously, I wish I could. I wish I could have did more like segments, like with talking, and so that way you know why I did what I did, and then like me and Shannon came together, and he came in with Jeff Hardy, and I'm like, oh great, this is exactly what I thought in my brain. I'm like, I see him come in, and I'm like, oh great, here comes another guy with mohawk tattoos, and it's Shannon Moore for crying out loud. He's way more advanced than I am, way more, there goes my character, there goes my job, you know. But Shannon was awesome, man. He come in, he talked to me right away. He's like, you know, you being a new guy, you know, I want to work with you. Let's do something cool. And then we started talking. We had similar ideas. We had similar attitudes. We wanted to grow this little faction we want to make. And we agreed on everything. That it was the weirdest thing, you know. And we come up with Inc. And we thought it was, you know, something new, something edgy, something for the fans to get behind. And it looked like they did for a while, you know. And of course, you know, Inc. had its ups and downs on TV and stuff like that. I mean, we were on the road for, 2 years, man. And they were some of the best times of my life, you know, learning. We were on the road with, it was me, Shannon, Jeff, Matt. And, you know, I was just learning from them, those guys, and going to house shows, man. We were blowing the roofs off of places, man. It was so much fun. And just like learning through Shannon, man, it was just great because I was able to become myself even more, and to not be so scared to show myself, to show who I really am, you know. And that was our message too, is that don't be afraid to show who you really are, no matter what you look like. You know, if you're overweight, or if you're too skinny, or if you're, you know, if they think you're a nerd, or you know, you have too much tattoos or piercings or whatever, don't be afraid to show who you really are. Don't hold back, because in that person could be one heck of an artist. Mm-hmm. You know, make songs to inspire the world, or paintings, or drawings, or, you know, or the next president. You never know, you know what I mean? So that was pretty much our message, and we could have, I mean, we had a lot of great ideas, and we could have went somewhere, you know, that you could never see a tag team go, you know, because we did something else, man. We pushed the envelope, you know. We weren't afraid to.
Absolutely. Definitely the quintessential message of don't judge a book by its cover. So it certainly, and you guys certainly related to the crowd. I mean, you guys were over, and it worked. And there was a slight transition. And what was it that caused Ink Inc. to be no longer?
I mean, there just comes a time where I'll give you a perfect example. Like, not an example, but the way as soon as I started wrestling, I sat down and talked to Bubba, and it was some of Bubba's advice when I first started wrestling. You know, there's literally two things in this business that you really want. Either you want money, or you're taking a step forward, meaning you're learning something, you're improving yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was getting paid, you know, whatever, but I was always that person that, because I was new still and stuff like that, I wanted to learn more. I wanted to do more, you know what I mean? I wanted to be more profitable to the company that I'm working for.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt, Shannon felt, that we weren't really doing anything. I mean, we were here and there, you know, there was no really main storyline that we can get involved in. I mean, some of the promos that we did that nobody's seen were phenomenal. They were great, and you could just tell, like, fans would have been able just to tell that we're just out there having fun. You know what I mean? That we're not reading from a script.
Mm-hmm.
We're out there having fun with it, and it was entertaining, you know? But, you know, I felt that it was time to step aside. You know, it was one of the biggest decisions I've ever made, not just in my career, but life, because I knew what was going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I had everything, you know, house, truck, you know, a life, basically. And when I stepped away, everything dwindled away. You know what I mean? I mean, obviously, I stepped down and went back to the indies because I felt that I needed to, because obviously I wasn't getting, because I wanted to wrestle. I got in the business to wrestle,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I wasn't wrestling as much as I wanted to, and I wasn't getting better at like I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So I discussed it with Shannon and stuff, and we agreed, and he ended up leaving a couple months after I did. And I mean, I had a couple more years on my contract, but, you know, I asked for my release and I got it, you know, and because I just wanted to better myself. You know, I told TNA that I just want to step aside and I want to better myself, you know, put myself in a better situation where I can be more profitable to a company and see what I can do, you know, and be me, you know, but even more and evolve again like I have been.
Yeah.
So I stepped aside, and I went through a lot of things after that, man. I was busy on the indies, which was great. I was traveling a lot more around and being more one-on-one with fans and stuff like that, and just doing my thing and finding myself again in that ring, you know, because after my injury in TNA, it wasn't really the same, you know. So, and then I became something completely different, this Dog of War character that I've been doing, and it's more me. It's showing more emotion. It's letting the fans basically in more of my life, and it's like an attitude. It's like a revolution, I guess, you know, of mine that I'm starting, you know, and people are getting on board with it. That's a good thing. It's inspiring people. It's making people stronger, you know, and living their lives, because that's all it's about anyways.
Absolutely. Yeah, and one thing interesting about that is one thing I realize is that with a character, it's always good to leave enough out to put even more layers on your character. And I think that's what people are attracted to. When you put more layers on your character, people can cling to that. I mean, of course, we have the two biggest examples and Sting and The Undertaker. But when you do revolutions, like you did from coming in from TNA into you know, just putting even more layers and evolving. I can tell that's what fans are really attracted to, and that's what really helps your brand. So you said that you spent some time in the indies. Let us know, post TNA, some really good indie moments that you've had so far.
Well, I mean, literally nowadays, I just went to Canada this past weekend, and I wrestled for Real Canadian Wrestling, and that was one hell of an experience, man. They have a great roster up there. Locker room, very professional, very respectful. And, like, I was talking to the promoter guy up there, and it's just, like, I was telling him, you know, like, in TNA, you know, because they didn't really know what I can do, you know, all right, what kind of match can we put him in, stuff like that. And a lot of promotions are like that with me when they, you know, call me up and stuff. I'm like, I could do anything. You know, I've stepped toe to toe with, you know, 300 pound dudes and do, you know, big stuff and, cruiserweight stuff, top rope stuff, you know, diving, you know, jumping off top rope, you know, I can do, submissions. I can do ground wrestling. I can do crazy stuff, you know, tables, chairs, lighter fluid, you know, all kinds of stuff. I can do it all, man. And a lot of, ever since I went back to the indies, people have been realizing it and seeing that. They're like, oh, man, there is something to Jeff. You can actually wrestle. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad I stepped away. It was definitely a good step on my part, you know, because for one, I help myself, you know what I mean? And I show the fans that I'm a lot more than just this, you know, wrestling 101, you know, character that they saw a little bit of on TNA, you know. So, and I found myself too, you know, like, you know, I do a lot more crazier stuff in the ring, and the fans are like on their feet the whole time. And when I hear this is awesome, you know, throughout the match, stuff like that, it's a great feeling, you know what I mean? I'm out there doing my job, because it comes down to entertaining the fans. That's your job, you know. So, you know, going to the indies and plus getting back with the boys on the indies and going to new promotions that I haven't wrestled for, because before TNA and during TNA, I was just pretty much here in Florida, you know. So once I got back on the indies, I got to spread my wings a bit and travel a lot more, you know, up and down the East Coast, you know, Ohio, Jersey, New York, Virginia, the Carolinas, Georgia. You know, I got all around, and now I'm going to Canada, and I'm looking to maybe go to Japan for a little bit, you know, and maybe Russia a little bit too. You know, it's time for me to go international, you know what I mean, and go out there and just meeting the different characters and different talents that's out there. I love getting in the ring with different people because I'm still learning myself. You know, I love to, you know, feel different, you know, different styles of wrestling and stuff. And that just makes me a better person. So that way I'm ready for anything when it comes up, you know? So like, I would say my most biggest and different experience would probably be the Canadian one I just did this weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, just different style, different area, you know, different attitudes, man. The respect up there is great, man. I love it, man. People were nice when I got off the plane. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like in Florida, man. A lot of people are just mean. But it was a lot of fun. It was a great experience. And they're actually bringing me back in January. So we got a big show coming up.
Congratulations. Well, yeah, let us know, as far as your TNA experience, what are the three, if you can think of three most memorable matches that you've had in your TNA career, what would they be?
My number one match would probably be me and Shannon versus Theme 3D.
Mm-hmm.
We did table matches and they wasn't even really TV. It was house shows. To be honest with you, that was probably the most funnest time. I mean, obviously it hurt really bad because it was with the Dudleys and it was in the old ECW arena. It had the ECW fans, and literally there's no forgiving with those fans. And I loved every second being out there in front of them, and they loved me because you could hear them, man. We had so much fun. Like, I heard so much noise from those fans. It was just a blast. And then I think the day after, we went to Hammerstein Ballroom. Man, like I seen Madison Square Garden, like, literally two blocks away. You know what I mean? As I'm going into Hammerstein, and just walking in that building was just, it was overwhelming, man. I was honored to be able to show what I have. And hopefully one day I get to go back and really show, because I'm so much more now in the ring and for the fans, you know. So, you know, that'd probably be my number one. Number two would probably be some pay-per-view matches that we had with Beer Money, with Robert Roode and James Storm, and it was, yeah. It was so much those guys. I learned so much from those guys. Those guys are great veterans in this business, and they know what they're doing, you know. And we had fun doing it. I mean, we had a lot of fun on the house shows with those guys too, but doing pay-per-view matches, I remember, I don't remember the exact one, but we had like three of them with those guys. And the ones that I do remember that were really great because, like, when I was wrestling Storm, he would allow me to step out of my shell, you know, and do what I can do. You know, me and him gelled, I believe, very well together. And literally, we didn't have to talk. You know, we just went out there and beat the crap out of each other, and it was a lot of fun. You know, and I stepped out of that shell, and I got to grow as a wrestler with those guys on pay-per-view matches, and obviously the house shows and stuff was a blast to me. Trying to think of like maybe a singles one or something, but it's not really popping in my head right now. I mean, I know when we had planned, like me and Shannon wanted to go at it. You know what I mean? Like turn on each other just to have a little fun. You know what I mean? That would have been a lot of fun, but. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But, I mean, I did a lot of explosion matches, like one-on-one, which was a lot of fun, like with Desmond Wolfe, you know. He is a phenomenal wrestler, man. I had a couple matches with him. I learned so much in just those few matches I had with him. They were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, with Young Bucks, like I had single matches with them, tag matches with them. I mean, we had so much fun with those guys, back and forth, you know, with each other and just entertaining. I mean, there would be times with the Bucks that we'd be sitting in there, we would go nuts on each other, back and forth with moves and craziness, and our heads are spinning, we're beating the crap out of each other, and just stop and look at each other and just smile. You know what I mean? Because it was so much fun. Like, that was, it was just it was a blast, man, and can't wait to have some of those days back again, you know. But
wow.
That would have to be... Yeah, them were my three probably, man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man.
That's awesome. So, a slight turn. There was a, probably, it was last year sometimes, maybe earlier this year, last year, that there was a big story going around where you were at Walmart and you made a tweet about you making more money at Walmart than you did at TNA. Let us know the backstory behind that. What caused you to do that, and all the buzz that tweet got was insane. And just let us know a little bit more about that, as far as where your head was when that came out.
I'll tell you exactly where I was, and to be 100% honest with you, yes, I do work at Walmart. I had to get a job at Walmart just to make some extra cash for the family, because me and the beautiful Brittany Savage have a 5-year-old now, or a 5-month-old now.
Congratulations.
And thank you very much. And I'm happier than ever. You know what I mean? But we just needed something concrete. I needed a real job, because obviously when we're on the indies, you can't claim that. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I need an apartment, but I'm on the indies. Let's make some money. You know what I mean? Let's make some deals happen. You can't get a place. You can't get a loan. You can't get, you know, anything. You need a concrete job. You know what I mean? So I got a job at Walmart. It was very convenient. I worked, you know, there and stuff. And I had a fan come in, and I've seen him around, like, at the gym and stuff like that and stuff. And he said hey to me real quick and walk on, you know, whatever. But then I seen him come in at Walmart. I came in for a shift, and he's like, oh, hey, Jesse Neal, how you doing? I'm like, hey, how's it going, man? He's like, oh, you work here? Because obviously I was in my uniform and stuff, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, man, I'm just, you know, making some extra money for the family and stuff, you know, making things. That's honorable, man. You're on TV. Now you're working here, man. It takes a lot to do that. I'm like, hey, man, you know, I got a baby now, so, you know, I have to step up as a man, you know, so I do that. And literally 5 minutes later, he leaves, you know, done. I thought it was over. Not even an hour later, I get a text from a friend of mine saying that I hit the dirt sheets. Jesse Neal worked at Walmart. Oh, my God, it went everywhere. Like, it's just horse crap. Like, I mean, just because I was on TNA for 3 years, you know what I mean, and I was on TV for a bit, oh, my God, it's something to talk about, something to do. Like, I work at Walmart, man. I don't want the whole world talking about it. I don't need the whole world talking about it. And, yes, I was very tired. I was working hard, you know what I mean, working the indies, working a real job. You know, and I seen all this crap about, oh, TNA this, TNA that. I'm so sick of people running their mouths about crap they don't even know. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, don't even bother with it. Like, I'm working. Leave me alone. You know what I mean? I'm not looking for attention. I'm not begging for it. I don't want it. You know what I mean? When I'm at the wrestling shows or indie shows or I'm promoting shows, yes, give me the attention. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No Walmart and leave me alone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I tweeted something out of, you know, emotion, you know, which I probably shouldn't have, but, you know, meaning that I'm getting paid now. You know what I mean? I'm not working for TNA. Obviously, they're not paying me because I'm not working for them. So, yeah, I'm getting paid now to help, you know, with my family and stuff and survive. You know, that's what we do. We have to do. Who else has their jobs and stuff like that? You know, why can't I have a job? You know, why is it so different if I have a real job? So, yeah, I tweeted out of emotion, which I definitely have stopped doing that. You know what I mean? But cause I don't need to bring more attention to what it doesn't need, you know. But, you know, yeah, I do work at Walmart. I'm very proud of that. I'm working. You know what I mean? I'm not a bum living on the street. You know, I was homeless there for a little while, you know, and that's not fun, you know. I know how it is to starve, you know, and that's not fun either, you know. But it makes me a bigger man because I know how it is to suffer like that, and I'm not going back to that. You know, I work. I provide, you know, and that's how we are in life. You know, not just a pro wrestler, but a human being. You know, you have to provide to survive, and we're surviving, so...
Much respect to you for that. I, as a husband and a father of a two-year-old and one on the way, you don't get nothing but respect to me for that because I think that's what a lot of people miss. That comes with media, period. People expect this type of lifestyle when it comes with people in media and some type of celebrity status. There's some type of, you know, invincible type status that a lot of people expect. But hey, listen, just like you said, if you had, your family comes first, and that's what gets much respect on my end, because you said, okay, well, I know that being in the type of celebrity status and having that type of television exposure can create a lot of pride and arrogance in a lot of people. But hey, you got to humble yourself when it comes to your family. I have been there. I've been in journalism. I've been to speaking engagements. I've done a lot of stuff in my day. But you know, there were some times that money wasn't as much as I wanted it to be, and I had to bring it down a little bit and do something that I know that wasn't necessarily to my liking, but you know, family comes first, so absolutely utmost respect to you for that. For sure,
I'll do whatever it takes to provide for my family. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, and it was good. It's good. It's humbling. You know what I mean? It's very humbling to me that you know I still have the heart for this business, because 9 times out of 10, man, if you got to get a real job, you ain't gonna be doing this business. But I'm pushing harder than I ever have, working a real job and in the wrestling business, where keeping my body in shape, still, you know, putting out, you know, great matches out there. Like, I mean, we beat the crap out of each other out there, and then the very next day I'm back at my real job, you know what I mean? So it's very humbling. I still have that dream. I still have that drive more than ever now, because obviously I have a family now, so I have something real to provide for. You know, I'm just not one of those guys that just, oh, I just want to go out and drink and have a good time and, you know, blow all my money on stupid stuff. You know, I have a family now, so I have more of a drive to make money and provide, so that way we don't, you know, go without, or they don't go without, you know.
Absolutely. Much respect. So let us know as we close, let us know your upcoming events. Let us know where you are now and what to expect from Jesse Neal.
Well, man, I got a few good things coming up. A couple projects I can't really mention, but you know, I'm always on the hunt for new stuff and everything, and you never know what I'm up to. But I got a couple shows here in Orlando and Port St. Lucie. I got a show in October, a show with Vintage. Very good group of guys down there here in Orlando now. It's crazy. We're gonna have actually a TV production now, a local channel, you know, here in Orlando, Saturday mornings. You know what I mean? Back in the day when we were kids watching wrestling, so I get the privilege and the honor to be a part of that. So that'll be a good thing. Very professional locker room there too. You know, they've definitely gone through some changes, and you know, they got some big stuff coming up there too. And another promotion, CWE in Port St. Lucie coming up next month. So couple local shows still going on. Me and the wife might be moving up north, so a lot of big things will happen once we move up north. A lot more promotions, a lot more shows to see Jesse Neal at, and of course Brittany Savage at. Like I said before, Canada, going right back up there again. It was so much fun, you know, beating the crap out of the Canadians. I'm ready to do it again, you know. So I get the honor to come back up there, and they were talking about Edmonton, Alberta, and even Calgary. And I get to wrestle right in there, and that'll be a true honor to wrestle there. I've always wanted to wrestle up in Canada and having a blast there. So that'll be in January when it's, negative 30. So outside won't be so good, but inside will be a blast.
That's awesome. That is absolutely amazing. Jesse Neal, I want to thank you so much for taking your time to let us know more about you and to really clear the air on some things. And it was much needed, and I thank you so much for allowing me to speak with you and the Pancakes and Power Slam show. I learned a lot. I as a journalist, I followed you in your career in wrestling, but as from a personal level, I learned a lot more, and I definitely respect all of the hard work that you've done. Not only in the wrestling scene, that's nothing compared to your family. My biggest thing is that, you know, my respect comes from your service for this country and your service for your family. So big ups to you for that, sir.
Thank you very much. And also, let me throw in there real quick, bookings or anything, just email me bookjesseneal@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter and Facebook. Of course, it's the Jesse Neal on Twitter. So thank you for the time. It was a true honor to get my piece out and the truth, man. It's always about me spitting the truth out. So thank you for the time. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Have a good evening.
All right. Thank you. You too.
Oh, bye-bye.
Jesse Neal, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic, fantastic interview from Jesse Neal. So delighted and so privileged to have him clear the air about just the dirt sheets and the tweet that came out and just really what he's doing. Just much respect for Jesse Neal for serving for this country about a dozen years ago. And on top of that, of course, just really letting us know more about who he is and where he's at and his endeavors going on here. Very, very much respected. Ladies and gentlemen, this is 130 episodes of the Pancakes and Power Slam show. We are so live. We are so live and so glad to have you here, Night of Champions Aftermath. Derek, our Pancakes and Power Slams correspondent, is live on the air. As always, every week, pleasure to have you, sir.
Here we are, 130 episodes in. That was an awesome interview. Let's give it up for Chris Featherstone. He is on top of his game. He knows where to find him. He knows the best interviews are right at his fingertips, and he always, always delivers. Pancakes and Power Slams Nation, Crave Wrestling. Let's all take 2 seconds of silence for Chris Featherstone. One, two. Okay, hey, we're back. Great job, everybody. This is awesome. 130 episodes. We got a lot to talk about, and we have
less than
45 minutes, but, you know, first part of the show, absolutely wonderful, groundbreaking, great insight. I wouldn't take it back for the world, man. What's going on?
Absolutely. Before we get into Night of Champions, we're going to have a quick pause for a break, and we'll be right back on the show.
Vision United presents the 10th Annual Glory Fest Music and Arts Honor Show, Saturday, September 27th at Longstreet Studios, 300 East Longstreet, Columbus, Ohio. Doors open at 7 p.m., $10 at the door. Again, the 10th Annual Glory Fest Music and Arts Honor Show, Saturday, September 27th at 300 East Longstreet, Columbus, Ohio. $10 at the door, doors open at 7 p.m.
Night of Champions has came, and it is gone. And we are going to talk about Night of Champions. Of course, we have about 45 minutes left of the week tonight. We've got about a little bit over a month left for the next pay-per-view, which is Hell in a Cell. So throughout these next few weeks, we're going to talk about just legendary Hell in a Cell matches. This week we're going to talk about the very first Hell in a Cell match, which is Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker, 1997 at the Bad Blood pay-per-view. Bad Blood pay-per-view. So we'll get to that. Real quick, let's go through Night of Champions. We start off with the pre-show, which is the Peep Show. Chris Jericho is the host of was the guest of the Peep Show. Of course, Christian is the host. Christian, before he was injured, he left more as a heel, but he was having he was going back and forth with Jericho. He kind of played heelish a little bit, and then we seen more of a face side of Christian. I first of all, I don't know what the purpose of this was, because of course you saw the Orton Randy Orton part and just didn't really work out too much. It was just it seemed like they just tried to put another element to the feud because it was thrown together and rushed. So it seems like what the entire point of that Peep Show was just to kind of extend the feud a little bit. That's really all I got from that.
I didn't get too much from it either. It's fun to see Christian come back. And I was actually reading an article the other day. You might have came across it, where it said one of the wrestlers quoted that Christian was probably the guy in the ring that, he would really beat you up. He was really stiff. So it was, I thought it was kind of interesting of all the people that they just like, yeah, Christian's stiff guy in there, which is great. But anyway, off topic. I like to see Christian come back. It was kind of weird to see him and Chris Jericho. In the past, they've always had pretty good chemistry, because I guess outside of wrestling, they're really good friends. But, yeah, there wasn't really much point to it. It's kind of a time filler, which I'd say they kind of had to do, but that's what it was. But it was a good way to bring back Christian, I suppose. So hopefully we can continue seeing some more of him.
Yeah, I just don't know if I want to see him wrestling again. He's so injury-prone, I just don't know. I'm a big – I like Christian. I've always liked Christian more than Edge, actually. But I just don't know if – I just don't know if it's the way to go with getting Christian back in a ring. I'm not too – I just don't know. I'm a little bit – leery of him being back in the ring. Next, we have Golden Stardust. They become the new tag team champions, Derek. I think we both called it. I think we both called that. I wanted the Usos to win because I just wanted them to have a long demolition style title reign. But I think I said it on the show. I know I've said it to other people. Outside of the show, that either way I was fine. I like Golden Stardust as a team. Usos my favorite team. I like Golden Stardust too. And just the many layers of Cody Rhodes just shows here. And I'm glad that old Goldy got a taste of another championship gold in the WWE. So it's nostalgia meets kind of the new generation type, you know, deal to me, because there's about a 15-year difference between Dustin and Cody, although they are brothers. I'm totally okay with them being champions because, like I said, I'm on board with Goldust having another title reign, and Stardust is just, you know, hey, this is another layer of Cody Rhodes that we see, and it's working really well.
Cody Rhodes executes that role so well. I mean, he could almost rival Goldust. And I understand what you mean. It's kind of like the 15-year difference, and it's great to see Goldust. Just, who would have thought 12 years ago that we'd be talking about Goldust in 2014?
Yeah,
winning the,
that's a great point.
Winning titles and just having the exposure that he's been having, the success. I mean, he still has in-ring ability that could rival almost anybody. I mean, he can go. Cody can go. And Cody has really morphed himself into an image of Goldust. I mean, almost, like I said, perfectly. He's just, that team has really worked to get where they're at. They deserve title belts. I want them to have that for a long time. Hopefully, and I like the Usos. They had it for a while in the demolition run. But, yeah, that was great. We both called it. It was time. The timing was perfect for this. Hopefully, they really just milk this team for everything that they can do for the tag team division.
Absolutely. 347-884-8452 is the number to call live. chat room, we're going to do something different. We're going to have the chat room give us questions for Derek, or you can tweet them at Crave Wrestling. And I'll start, actually. The first question is, Jacqueline, Terry Reynolds, and Ryan Shamrock were known as what in the WWE? That's for Derek.
They were the Disciples of Apocalypse.
Absolutely not. Of course they weren't. Yeah. They were, it was a three-letter word for a mood that females feel.
Yes, PMS. I can't believe it. I totally
Absolutely.
Forgot all about that. Wow. I do remember
PMS.
That now. I haven't thought of that in years.
Yep, the Pretty Mean Sisters. PMS was something else, definitely was. And yeah, and who did they accompany to the ring?
Ken Shamrock. No, they didn't. I can't.
It was Sean Stasiak. Sean Stasiak, otherwise known as, or better known as, Meat. Yeah, he was
Sean. For him. He would always get thrown out of the ring or something. He would always run in and he would immediately get thrown out. That was kind of his shtick for a while, wasn't it?
just a gimmick name, Meat, is ridiculous to me. But next we have Sheamus defeat Cesaro. My goodness, this match was hands down the best match of the night. Their match at Payback was amazing, and it was also for the U.S. title. Just to know that 3 months later they would have a match even better than the one they had at Payback, I was so just, I mean, standing ovation for Sheamus and Cesaro. This match was just easy, instant nomination for match of the year to me. Just this feud between the two, it's not hyped as much. But at the same time, I mean, I was so impressed with this match, just utterly impressed. Have nothing bad to say about this match at all. I'm glad that Sheamus won because he's doing so much positive things with that U.S. title. And as long as he keeps defending it and defending the way that he is and being such a solid worker that he is, that U.S. title will be revived again. And that's what I've been just ranting about for so long as far as those mid-card championships. I was so impressed with this match.
It was the best match, and it did. It stole the show. I totally agree. I mean, I was on the edge the whole time. You don't get that much excitement in a match too much anymore. You do. It's hit or miss sometimes, but, I mean, this one, yeah, it did. When I think of Night of Champions, I'm going to remember this more than I am the botched end of Lesnar and Cena. We'll get to that, but it was a great match. Took the show. Great job. You can't really get – you never get a bad show with those two or a bad match. If you put those two together, they're always going to go at it. It's going to be great.
Yeah, very well said. Miz and Dolph Ziggler. Miz wins, become new Intercontinental Champion. We'll talk about what happened on Raw. But – for some reason, they're deciding to flip-flop championships. Of course, we'll get more about that in Raw. But Miz at least got a taste of being Intercontinental Champion again.
Yeah, he did. I like it better on Ziggler. Ziggler's just put his time in a little more, I think. And not that the Miz hasn't, but it's Ziggler's turn. So, and they show it again on Raw.
Yeah. And then we see Seth Rollins' promo, and of course we know that and Derek, you actually made a post on the Crave Wrestling Facebook site as far as Roman Reigns getting better, getting well soon. We all at Crave Wrestling wish speedy recovery for Roman Reigns at a hernia surgery. And then, of course, to fill his place, we got Dean Ambrose, your boy, coming back from a cab, and then he gets contained by security after brawling with Rollins. I was expecting this. I think it was appropriate to do this, but I just don't know how far this Ambrose and Rollins feud to go, and I really don't know what the payoff is going to be.
The payoff is maybe, I don't know if the WWE wants to invest as much in Roman Reigns as they thought they would. Or as much as I thought they did, in other words. It was kind of a spur of the moment. I think we all knew Ambrose was going to come back at Night of the Champions. And he did in his typical fashion. So I'm open to anything they're going to do with any of these three individuals. Rollins, not as much, because he's kind of tarnished now. Fell out. That's going to hang over him for a long time, I believe. So, I mean, it's kind of a toss-up. You know, Ambrose, Reigns. They'll probably still keep pushing Reigns. He's going to have a big pop when he comes back, and they're going to really take advantage of that. But it's payoff in the long run, you know, it doesn't hurt anything. I mean, really, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Next, we have Rusev defeating Mark Henry. Of course, we knew this was going to happen. The way that it happened at Night of Champions, I was okay with. The way it happened at Raw, totally not okay with.
Yeah. He passes out last night or something. Before he left, then Mark Henry, he's another Kane Mark. He's there to be put on the bill. He is the world's greatest, strongest man, but nobody really, you can't believe that anymore. Almost put him back to sexual chocolate because people like them more.
I like That's What I Do, but we just got to know what he does is not just put people over, because as far as That's What I Do, that's what we're seeing. So what he does is put people over, and as we saw on Raw in a drastic way. Not a fan of it. I really wish they'd do something with him in the mid-card scene as far as United States Championship, but we'll see. I don't think we'll see much of Mark Henry as a major player, but I hope I'm wrong. Orton defeating Jericho. This is something else that we knew was going to happen. However, I love this match as well. I think this was the second best match of the night just because it was a very, very solid match, and it just proved to me that Jericho is not the culprit of a Bray Wyatt D push. We didn't see no part of the Wyatt family on Night of Champions or no Raw involvement. So that's what I don't understand as far as people are blaming Chris Jericho for, you know, they're saying John Cena buried him and then Chris Jericho didn't help. But no. Night of Champions show that Chris Jericho still has it, and that match was absolutely awesome.
It was an awesome match. Any match with Chris Jericho, I've said this many times, as well as you have, he cannot have a bad match. He will carry that match to make it awesome. And it was, Orton did his part. I mean, they put on a solid match. It kind of sucks because, you're not going to see Y2J for a while. And we talked, I believe it was last week, how it's kind of going to tarnish his image. We know he's going to come back. This isn't the last time we've seen Chris Jericho in WWE. At least I hope it's not. So, I mean, but again, they just kind of use him as a stepping stone. I like the match. I just knew that this is probably the last time we're going to see Jericho. He went out with a great, he put on a heck of a show, but, at the end, bittersweet.
Yeah, indeed it is. AJ Lee becomes new Divas champion as she defeats Paige and Nikki Bella.
Yeah, that match wasn't really all that. What came up next?
That's the reason why I was short with the Divas, because I know that you were going to be as well. I wanted Paige to keep it, but I understand why AJ has it. It's just a flip-flopping of championships, though. Just like the Intercontinental Championship, we'll get to that when we get to Raw. But I don't know about this flip-flopping. I'm not a big fan of it. Next, we have John Cena and Brock Lesnar. Cena wins by DQ because we see Seth Rollins come in the mix and interfere. I did not like this whatsoever, and I was so upset about it that I wrote an article after the pay-per-view on Bleach Report saying that, in my personal opinion, it did more harm than good for Seth Rollins, because him being in the same ring with John Cena and Brock Lesnar, he looked so out of place. I mean, completely out of place to be in that same ring with them. And I really hope that they don't just throw it to, I just cannot stand when wrestling promotions throw titles on people and expect the person to live up to the prestige of the title. I detest that. You got your Flairs, your Races, your Rhodes, the list goes on. Those people were established enough that they couldn't afford not to, the wrestling promotion couldn't afford not to have them as champion. That's what pro wrestling is missing. They're throwing titles on people and expecting the titles to make the person. That's ridiculous. That's backwards booking, and that takes away from the prestige of a title. I detest it, detest it, detest it. And they should do that. They should bring that back. They should bring back that concept of the wrestlers making the titles. You shouldn't just throw a title on there and expect it to work. And it's way, way, way too soon for Seth Rollins. And I really think that they need to really keep him far away from the title scene, develop his character as a heel, and then kind of do more dabbling with him in the title scene. But now, it's way too soon right now.
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree with everything you just said. For once, I think you're right. But
for once, you agree with a lot of things I say.
We agree a lot because great minds think alike. Yeah, Seth
Indeed.
Rollins, that would be an absolute travesty. It was a dumb finish. It was, I don't know, that was that last second. I don't know. Why? I don't want to see Seth Rollins anywhere near the title. It's too soon, and I think maybe the WWE was kind of heading towards that, since all of a sudden the referee didn't ring the bell, so Money in the Bank doesn't count.
Yeah,
come on. I mean, that was just, it was an abomination of a finish, and disgusting. And what are we going to supposed to do now? Are they going to keep pushing Lesnar and Cena and... It kind of left me scratching my head. What's next?
Yeah, indeed. We'll be right back for the Raw recap.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, hosted by Chris Featherstone and Derek of Crave Wrestling. This is the new Tuesday Night Titans.
Indeed it is. We are here. We are now. Raw recap. Ambrose has an in-ring promo and interrupted by John Cena. Both of them about to fight each other over a disdain of Seth Rollins, and then out comes the Authority. And see, they're having Rollins play this whiny type of character too, and just running away from everything. That doesn't help his character at all. And then eventually Triple H comes out and saying Rollins is not wrestling, and then books Ambrose against Kane and Cena against Randy Orton. And they're not helping Seth Rollins at all.
They're not. He looks like a coward, which is another reason. Yeah. I mean, just so wet behind the ears, it seems like. He doesn't know what to do with himself, and the WWE doesn't know what to do with him. They give that briefcase to him. He's expected to do something with it sometime, but again, he's like a puppy with his tail between his toes.
Absolutely. Next, we have Dolph Ziggler defeating The Miz, flip-flopping, and winning the Intercontinental Championship again. I just don't quite understand that. Why would you have The Miz winning at Night of Champions just to lose a day later? They did that last year at WrestleMania 29 when he beat Wade Barrett for the Intercontinental Championship at the pre-show and then lost the night after. So he's pretty pretty prone to one-night title reigns as far as the Intercontinental Championship is concerned. I absolutely have no idea why they did that. It's totally puzzling to me.
It's puzzling. Maybe they thought the mock IT championship would look great on Sandow. About the only thing I could think. I'm glad it's back in Ziggler's possession, but it's kind of a stupid thing. There was no point to any of it. Keep it on Ziggler.
Yeah. Indeed it is. It makes no sense. Jack Swagger wins the rubber match between him and Bo Dallas. Bo Dallas beat him on SmackDown. Swagger beat him on Raw. And Swagger beat him again on Raw. I really hope that this angle is over with. It did absolutely nothing to help Jack Swagger. And Bo Dallas just proves how much he just means nothing to the television wrestling. He should go back to NXT.
Yeah, he probably should, or maybe join Adam Rose's little posse that he has jumping around. He'd be great in that. A taco on his head or a root beer suit on or something.
Yeah. That would be quite funny. Natalya defeating Summer Rae. This was totally Divas crap. I just was shaking my head through the whole time. I don't like how they're just intertwining Total Divas I don't like how they're intertwining Total Divas to make us actually pay attention to a feud. I don't understand the purpose of it. It doesn't cause people to be interested. I know from a personal standpoint, I'm certainly not interested. The Total Divas show isn't a bad show. I've said before that I watch the show because it's just not a bad show to watch, and plus I can use some material to write about or talk about on my show. But just intertwining that with an actual feud in the WWE just doesn't make any sense to me.
That's the only thing they can do with the Divas. I mean, that's all they've got is this TV show that they have with E. There's nothing else. They have no idea what to do with the Divas to make them interesting or make them anything to care about in the ring. So they have this TV show. That's great. WWE's profiting from it. When it spills over into Monday Night Raw, no one's buying it. No one cares. It makes me almost want to turn the channel. Monday Night Football's on now, so I'll call it. You know, you see the Divas, like, okay, it's retarded. I don't like it. I want to get rid of it, but we can't. But that's all they know what to do with this thing. They've got a TV show, so let's spill over on our product, and it makes the product stink.
Yeah, just makes absolutely no sense at all to me. Ambrose defeating Kane by disqualification because we see interference by Seth Rollins. Like I said, I don't know the payoff between Ambrose and Rollins. I would rather for Rollins to be involved with Ambrose, but at the same time, what is this going to do for Dean Ambrose in the long run? When this feud is over, what happens to Ambrose?
Well, what's going to happen to Ambrose? I think he's got a solid platform to where, I mean, they could put him with a few people. I mean, he could feud with Cena for a while. I could see him feuding with Randy Orton, the Authority. I don't think he's really there yet. Keep it rolling. I mean, I really like this crazy guy gimmick that they have with him, and it's just going to – he's got that. Keep building on that. I mean, they make him look like a loose cannon, like a Brian Pillman, which I'm all for. And you can always use a character that's just absolutely insane and crazy. I can't really tell you what's going to happen with him next, but I think he can make almost any feud somewhat interesting just based off his characteristics.
Yeah. I like what they're doing with him. I like the loose cannon-style gimmick. But it's just so limited to me as far as the ceiling is concerned regarding past people who's had that type of gimmick. Similar kind of like the Mind Games type of, you know, eccentric gimmick, like the Pillmans and the Pipers and the Roberts. All three of them never even touched a World Heavyweight Championship. And out of the three, Piper was the only one who actually had a championship. Pillman, a singles championship. Pillman or Jake never had a single championship in the WWE. So I hope he doesn't fall in that trap. Ambrose and Cena I wouldn't be interested in. Ambrose and Orton would work. They can definitely carry over that feud as far as the authority's concerned. The authority's trying to get them, and they can fit in Randy Orton into there. I think you've got something going with that. Ambrose and Orton would definitely work. So hopefully that's next for Ambrose. It just doesn't seem like there's any type of ascension or some type of promotion after this feud is concerned. Really good six-man match between Sheamus and the Usos against Cesaro and Golden Stardust. The babyfaces get the win. So I just wonder if we'll see Sheamus and Cesaro again. I know Usos against Golden Stardust, that's set for SmackDown. But where does Sheamus and Cesaro go? Do we see another match between them? I don't see how Cesaro would get another U.S. title match because he's went against Sheamus at two pay-per-views this year and lost both of them. So I don't see what type of evidence he can prove, what type of evidence he can present to have another title match at all.
I don't see how that would work either. I mean, he was on such a high pedestal for maybe 3 or 4 weeks almost. But now he's back down to where Jack Swagger or something. I don't know. It's a shame to see that. I don't know if I was ever totally behind Cesaro as much as to being a top guy or someone who's almost in contention for it. I see more out of Sheamus than I do Cesaro, period. I think most people do, and we're still wondering, you know, why is this guy not being pushed a little more? But, it's good to see the two tangle, but, yeah, it's a great job for the baby faces, but, man, I don't see the heels losing the title anytime soon. I don't really see Cesaro doing a whole lot.
Yeah, what really hurt him was becoming a Paul Heyman guy. That was his downfall for sure. It was awkward. People weren't expecting it. People weren't behind it. And it just didn't fit. It just didn't make no sense at all. And his theme music has to go. It just doesn't make any sense. Rusev just demolishes Mark Henry. I just, for them to have such a good feud, for them to push Mark Henry so much and to have him change his gear, Big Show gives him a different singlet with the American flag. He cries during William Garcia's America the Beautiful. He really goes back and forth really well with Rusev. They had a very solid match on Night of Champions. But on Raw, it was pretty much a squash. I know they were selling his back injury, but they didn't have to do that to make Rusev a stronger heel. His match at Night of Champions was good enough to make him a stronger heel. You defeated the world's strongest man. You defeated the Hall of Pain. That's what I do. Someone who was just going, was just plowing through people during his World Heavyweight Championship run. So that's good enough. I just don't understand that type of booking. It made absolutely no sense to me. And I think it was a waste of trying to kind of overcook something that already tasted really well.
And Rusev, I don't think they know what to do with him. I mean, of course, they want to keep him on this big high as being a top heel because he's Russian or claims to be Russian or supports Russian. Nothing against Russia, but, you know, it's a big hot seat now. So let's who else are they going to put him against? He's nowhere near to be in Cena's category. I mean, he's nowhere near. A Chris Jericho feud might have been okay, but the thing is, Chris Jericho is Canadian. So that's not much patriotic U.S.
Yeah.
pride there.
Well, he was born in the States, though. He was born yeah. in New York.
Well, he says a boot and story, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing against that. I love Canadians. But it is, for with the feud, what they're trying to do with this whole patriotic American thing, they've got nobody else. I mean, Cena would be a great person. Hustle, ability, pride, but Rusev just isn't at that stage yet. So
yeah.
They're just going to have to mow down all these people, duds, might as well be. So what have they got? Unless they turn Bray Wyatt into some patriot acting person with us.
That would be. He would get the Mankind pop. I think it could work, but just from a patriotic standpoint, no. I don't think there's anybody left who's patriotic unless you bring back Dale Wilkes And I don't think there's a penny in the world as much as he bashes the WWE product. Or you can, Tom Brandy, he's the other Patriot that who's behind that mask. So maybe, or as we would know him as Salvatore Sincere of the WWE. So maybe bring back Tom Brandy. I don't know. We need some type of Patriot thing. But there's nobody else that would be, you know, would fit that Patriot role. Real quick, another question for you I see here. The question is, Vinny Vegas in the WCW is who? What was who? Vinny Vegas in the WCW was who?
Vinny Vegas was Big Daddy Cool. Kevin Nash.
Yeah. Kevin Nash. Good job. Fantastic, fantastic. Next we have Adam Rose and the Bunny defeating Heath Slater and Titus O'Neil. People don't like the Bunny gimmick, but I don't know. It's so ridiculous that it's intriguing to me. I guess that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, intriguing. It's nothing like the gobbledygooker or anything like that. So, I mean, they're doing an okay job of keeping the mystique of who is it. And obviously he's going to come out and be somebody that everyone knows. Hey, maybe it could be Vinny Vegas. But,
it could be. He must have shrunk a lot.
Fake Razor Ramon.
Yeah. I was thinking about bringing him on the show. That would be interesting to have him on the show. The fake Razor Ramon. Razor Ramon.
So, I get it. It's fun. Adam Rose has a great victory. And people want to know who's under the Bunny helmet. So I'll let it roll with that because that's all they got.
Yeah, indeed. Then, for some odd, ridiculous reason, we get a Nikki and Brie Bella segment. Oh, my goodness. They need to stop this. I mean, they just need to stop it. This feud had so much potential, and Stephanie McMahon isn't even involved in this feud anymore. That's what makes it so sad, that Stephanie and Brie was actually something to watch. It was actually, I could tolerate Stephanie and Brie. The Nikki makes the turn. I was okay with the Nikki turn because I thought it was going to be something much better. But she's playing this victim. You did all these things to me, Brie. You're all about yourself. Oh, my goodness. It's way too fake theater to me that I'm totally not convinced, for one. And for two, it creates absolutely no interest. It's not for a title. It's not for some type of stipulation. There's no type of setup for this at all. It just makes absolutely no sense. The only thing that I can think of as far as a payoff is concerned is this is leading to a John Cena and Daniel Bryan match down the road. But first of all, I don't want to see Brie and Nikki feud enough for as long as it's going to take for Daniel Bryan to come back. And then John Cena's not going to turn heel, so John Cena's going to be like, oh, okay, Nikki, well, I'm defending you because I'm your boyfriend, so but be sure not to, you know, do this and say that. That's just wrong. And then Daniel Bryan is going to – I don't want to see that. That's the only thing I can think may happen. But there's absolutely – to me, as far as my interest, there's no payoff to this feud. It makes absolutely no sense to me. Just horrible, terrible.
The best thing they could do is just have the Divas come out and be like the Nitro Girls, just dance around in the ring for a while with some, like, DJ pop music. And that would be a lot more interesting than what they've got now. I mean, I wish the WWE has to know that this is just dumb. It's garbage. Nobody wants to see this. It's not interesting. It's horrible acting. It's horrible in-ring talent. They could be talent, but the WWE chooses to just make them look foolish and stupid. So,
This is absolutely horrible.
I miss Nitro.
I do too. You can see it on the WWE Network for how much?
I think it's like, what, $8.88 now?
plus 111 makes 999. Lastly, we have John Cena defeating Randy Orton by disqualification as a result of Kane and Rollins' interference. Then we, the whole center block thing, Dean Ambrose is underneath the box. Yeah. Rollins flees and escapes through the crowd again, so they make him play the conniving type of weasel. And like I said before, it doesn't help his character at all. And I just don't – this Raw was just so weird because we see no Lesnar, no Cena, and then we see no Wyatt family, so we don't know what the heck that they're going to do with them. And nothing about Raw led up to Hell in a Cell. Absolutely nothing. And so it was just a really awkward Raw for me.
Yeah, it wasn't one of the best nights I've ever seen. Ambrose hiding under that. I almost expected that, you know. It was, which is okay, you know, bring him back in. He's supposed to be locked up in a closet or a room somewhere, and he just pops out of nowhere. How did they get him down there? You know, how did he find his way? But, yeah, it was spontaneous. It was fine. I was okay with that for being what it's worth. But, yeah, Rollins again running through. I mean, obviously he's afraid of Ambrose. And I don't blame him, but what does that do for Rollins? Nothing. Makes him look like a wuss.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back.
It is now time for the Flavor of the
Flavor of the Week this week is the Hell in a Cell match from 1997. Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, Bad Blood pay-per-view. I think there was only three Bad Blood pay-per-views ever. And this was a Bad Blood in your house. So some problems going on between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Of course, you know, Michaels was the special guest referee there was a match between Bret Hart and The Undertaker, and then Michaels was the special referee and accidentally super kicked them. And so they already had some animosity going on within each other. Again, actually, that would lead to further down the line. But in this particular time, we had the kind of the advent of Degeneration X, and you know, just the animosity between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker led to a fever pitch, and it becomes a match for the Hell in a Cell for the WWE Championship. Actually, it was a number one contenders match for the WWE Championship. And because of that, the match was under the confines of Hell in a Cell. But oddly enough, beforehand, and then of course, you know, this led to the month after that was the Montreal Screwjob, because Shawn Michaels won and ended up going against Bret Hart at Survivor Series the next month, which was the most controversial match of all time, of course. But Shawn Michaels won this match not because he was getting the upper hand. It was because there was some rumblings from Paul Bearer, because he was abandoned by The Undertaker. Him and Undertaker fell out. There were some rumblings going on as far as a brother that The Undertaker had, and this brother was burnt, and he's coming back, and he was a younger brother. And then all of a sudden during the match, Undertaker seemed like he had it all wrapped up and ready to go. And ready to put the coup de grace on Shawn Michaels. And then all of a sudden, the lights turn off. We get some red dim treatment to the light. And this eerie song comes on And all of a sudden we hear the infamous words from Vince McMahon, that's gotta be Kane. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Kane. Kane comes out, tombstones The Undertaker, and Shawn Michaels wins the match. First Hell in a Cell, I still think, 17 years later, definitely one of the best Hell in a Cell matches of all time.
This was when the WWE was just, they were boiling. They were just about ready to spill over the pot and onto the stove. Excellent build up to it. You had Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker. And what I really remember about this is the next night on Raw, there's this image of The Undertaker coming out when his music was played, and he was coming towards the ring, and he was coming out via cable, like a cable wire. When he dropped down to the ring, all of a sudden, Degeneration X music comes on. Shawn Michaels takes off the big trench coat and hat, and you know he's dancing around. I mean, it was such a moment. That was a moment in WWE history. I mean, unfortunate for Michaels, he hurt his back really bad during that match, which he had to be out for 4 years after that. And that's a whole new story in itself. But the Attitude Era, just almost another flame was lit to the Attitude Era under this match, I believe, or, you know, at this time. And, you know, it was right before the Montreal Screwjob, which is, you know, kind of made Vince McMahon the evil boss, and he played that to a T. Nobody could ever rival him as an evil boss. As far as the best Hell in a Cell, I mean, that's saved for Undertaker and McFoley, Mankind, which I believe was the summer after that happened. I mean, that was 98, like June. That was King of the Ring, 98. But, I mean,
sure
this was just the WWE, they knew what they had. They knew what they could do with this. I mean, both participants, just, and with Kane coming in, and just, oh, man, that was, I remember watching this, jumping up and down, being so excited. You know, of course, I was in, 11th grade, I think, 10th, 11th grade. I mean, you can't have better writing. You just can't. That was the point. The WWE just, they took everything by storm. Monday night was like Christmas. Pay-per-view was double Christmas. You'll never see that again, that much excitement. But, I mean, that was just at a cusp when WWE knew what they had. And that was just the beginning of a new era.
Yes, absolutely. And that's just really, and I got to, if I recall correctly, that's one of the last, if not the last, pay-per-views that Vince McMahon actually called. So it was really the passing of the torch in many aspects because, of course, after that, I mean, that was really hot in the Attitude Era. And then, you know, we have, of course, Austin McMahon starts after that. And it was really, really, really awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for continuing to support Pancakes and Power Slams. More Hell in a Cell talk next week. I want to thank Jesse Neal so much for the amazing interview. Of course, my hope is that as much as it went in the dirt sheets when he made the tweet, it'll go in the dirt sheets, so to speak, for him clearing the air on it. So that's my hope with the interview. I just really wanted to see everyone else to know where Jesse Neal is right now, what he's been up to. And Crave Wrestling has definitely made a niche of kind of having where are they now interviews. That's why Elijah Burke was a good one. Crimson was also a good one. And we really want to push up some really awesome talent, just like the Handsome one. We have a very, very big surprise for next week. So follow Crave Wrestling at Crave Wrestling. Go on the Facebook page. And we got a big surprise. We're going to reveal it on one of those social media sites. So hang tight for next week. Big surprise. You will be pleasantly satisfied. So until next week, thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week of wrestling. Daddy loves Elijah, and God bless. Bye-bye.